Hello, I'm Brenda Tremblay, welcoming you to this podcast from WXXI in Rochester, New York, and a conversation with David Chin. David currently serves as the artistic director of the Hong Kong Bach Festival, Malaysia Bach Festival, and the East Malaysia Bach Cantata Singers and Orchestra, as well as the principal conductor of the Association of Toronto Chinese Evangelical Church Musicians in Canada. David Chin is an inspiring and special musician, and he's going to be conducting the Voices Chamber Choir and Orchestra in a performance of Johann Sebastian Bach's St. Matthew Passion on Saturday, March 25th at 7 o'clock at the Reformation Lutheran Church in Rochester, New York. I asked David if he would trace his love of Bach all the way to the beginning.
Today, you know, in Malaysia, we have a lot of more than capable musicians in Malaysia today. And there have been more and more orchestras being formed. We even have our own independent city opera now in Malaysia. But back when I was in high school, that wasn't the case. And we only have a handful of good classical musicians who were trying to promote high-quality classical and sacred music. And one of them, her name is Elaine, and she is a Westminster Choir College graduate in the late 70s. And she became my mentor, one of my mentors. She has been the director of this choir called Inchi Choir in Malaysia. It is a Christian community choir where they come together to rehearse very intensively each week, and they perform one to two masterworks each year. For example, like Haydn's Creation, Mozart's Requiem, or Mendelssohn's Elijah and all that. And they were the first group that brought all this sacred music to life, to the audience in Malaysia. And I was very fortunate to be one of the audience, and later joined a choir right before I came to the States. And when I was in high school, I got to meet with Elaine. I found her to be a very friendly person, because before I met her, you know, I would always see her on stage from far, far away, and she's like this great music star, but I never get to meet her. But one time she came to my high school and did a concert at my high school. She is also a pianist. So, you know, I took the initiative and, you know, I spoke with her, and she was very, very friendly, and then we became acquainted, and then later we became friends. But although I consider her as one of my mentors, but she was never really my teacher, because I never really studied piano from her. I never studied conducting from her. But I learned a lot of musical principles, and also, you know, just really what is it like to be a musician, and how does music and our life, you know, how do they relate to each other? So I learned a lot, a great deal from her. And so this choir that I mentioned to you, the Inchi Choir, I think right before I left for United States, they performed, I think, a couple cantatas by Bach. And, you know, at the time, before I came to the States, you know, we all learn about Bach. We know this, you know, Bach is the father of Western music. They taught us that in high school. But that was it. And then we would go to piano lessons, and we would play some inventions or prelude and fugue from the Well-Tempered Clavier, not really knowing who he was. And I had no idea what cantatas were, you know, let alone the Passions and the B minor Mass, no idea whatsoever. And came to the States, and I was a piano major undergrad and in undergraduate studies. And, you know, many universities and colleges, even in the States, they are hesitate to put on a production of Bach music. I think that's because Bach music is, you know, in many people's mind, is very difficult to be done. You need very particular specialists to play and or to sing and to conduct. So, you know, throughout my undergraduate career, never got a chance to sing Bach. And I was very, very thankful. It was not until I came to Eastman School of Music, and even at that point when I was entering as a master's student, I had no idea what cantatas were. I mean, I knew there's this term cantata, but what it was, I don't have no idea.
What is the difference for someone who's not a pianist or a singer, You know, what's the big deal with cantatas? If you were familiar with his musical language on the piano, what was different about singing it?
You know, Bach cantatas, Bach motets, those music that has text with them, which make me able to relate to them more directly. And, you know, especially as a Christian and growing up as a Lutheran, you know, those texts really means a lot to me. So I think that is very different. And also, you know, singing is a very personal, very direct kind of music making. You know, you are not playing an instrument, but really the sound really coming out from within. So that is very different and special kind of experience. It's completely different from, say, playing a prelude and fugue.
Can you tell us about an experience you had when you were singing Bach for the first time, when you thought, just, wow?
I'm very thankful. The first time that I had the opportunity to perform Bach was actually with Voices, this group that I'm conducting. And Dr. Weiner was very kind. I think it was towards the end of my first year. He put together a series of Bach motets, and he invited me to sing with Voices in a couple of the concerts. And we did Bach motet. I think we did Singet dem Herrn, Der Geist hilft, and all that. And just imagine, this is me first time singing Bach, and here we are, double chorus. And, you know, I remember we only had two singers to a part, which is very similar to what we're going to do with St. Matthew Passion. And it's quite challenging and difficult, and I was intimidated in the beginning. And I remember I was standing next to Pablo Bustos, and that was the first time I met him, and he was very encouraging, and you know, I think we had a great time singing the motet, and that's how we get acquainted. And then now, you know, he has sung Evangelist for me in St. John Passion. We have done 10 Bach cantatas together, and then now he is the Evangelist of St. Matthew Passion. So I'm very thankful in Rochester for these two people. One is Dr. William Weinert, and another one is Pablo Bustos, who have been extremely great friends, mentors, and also just great encouragements to me.
How have you been taught to perform Bach? Your teachers, what have they given to you?
Well, I think I've shared that with you many years ago. My very first experience of really, you know, a teacher that really changed my mind about Bach was my piano teacher in college. And, you know, how we have always been taught that Bach is very mathematical and very technical. So you would never play Bach with pedal. You would never play Bach with rubato. And you would always just play them as it is, whatever is on a page.
Rubato means?
Oh, rubato means, you know, taking flexibility in tempo.
And like slowing down.
Slowing down, speeding up. Exactly.
You wouldn't do that in Bach.
Yep, that's what I was being taught. You know, Bach is not romantic, you know. Then, of course, you know, I was practicing that way. And then I have a Brazilian teacher. She's very old, large woman, very cute, adorable. I loved her to death. And she would walk in to the studio when I was practicing. She's like, David, why are you playing Bach in such manner? You know, I say, well, isn't this how you play Bach, you know, just very direct and no rubato and all that. She's like, no, you know, Bach is very, very romantic, you know. That's why he has like 20-something kids, you know. Otherwise, So that's the first time I realized that, you know, Bach, you know, really is very romantic. He was. But then how to perform Bach as a conductor, that really didn't happen until the very end of my career here at the Eastman School of Music. I remember I had one semester left, and I had fulfilled all my recital requirements at the time. And one day in my lesson, I was sitting with Dr. Weiner, and you know, he was saying that, you know, David, you have nothing to do in the spring semester, so maybe you should conduct something. And I was like, oh, that's great. You know, I always love to conduct them. Never turn down, you know, to an opportunity to conduct. And he say, how about Bach's Magnificat? I say, what is Magnificat? You know, what is that? So, but I said yes right away because I thought it was a good opportunity. So I put together a concert highlighting Bach Magnificat. And then we also did a cantata. I still remember it's cantata 191. That's my first cantata I ever conducted. It is very similar to the Gloria movement from the B minor mass. And then to open a concert, we did the orchestral suite number 3. And we did it with one singer per part and one instrument per part. and it was very challenging. And that was my first ever Bach concert, but I still remember how special it was, you know, to really come together with all these fantastic musicians from the Eastman School of Music. And this is one of the things I think we take for granted in Rochester. You know, we have so many wonderful and terrific musicians around us that are capable, beyond capable, of doing wonderful music, but sometimes we take them for granted. And I know that I will miss Rochester a lot if I have to leave here one day.
Now, you have sort of a dream of spreading the beauty and gospel of Bach across parts of Asia. Tell us about that.
Well, this is just a dream, and many great dreams require money. But this is my dream. You know, I admire conductors like, you know, John Elliott Gardner, like Ton Koopman, and even Masaaki Suzuki, whom I met a couple years ago in Tokyo. I adore them and the things that they did and to the world, really. You know, they have a choir. They have a full-time orchestra that they work with. They will record all the Bach cantatas, and they will go around the world to have tour and perform and all that. I think all that are great, and I would love that one day. However, you know, if I really have the money to, you know, fund a project, for example, that I want to do, you know, I would probably not have a full orchestra or a full choir. I might have maybe several key musicians, maybe a very good tenor, a very good continuo player, you know, a cellist, you know, a keyboardist, and maybe a very good oboist and a very good violinist. So just 8 of us, or 8 to 10 of us. And then we would travel around the world to work with maybe semi-amateur or semi-professional groups in schools or in church, or, you know, whatever. And we would rehearse side by side with them, this professional with them, and then we would perform concerts with them, so that after we left, you know, it is not like, oh, they came and they gave a great concert and then now they left, you know, what do we do? But after we left, they would have performed Bach, they would have experienced the music making of Bach, and then hopefully they would continue you know, what they did, you know, with music of Bach. And it's kind of like the missionaries concept, you know. You know, you go and form a church and then you leave, and then they would take care of themselves and hopefully they will flourish.
It's a beautiful idea for sure.
Yes, and it requires money.
Yeah. Well, you said you need a good continuo player. That would be you. I mean, I've heard you play continuo with ensembles. You're amazing.
You know, I really never had an harpsichord lesson. I'm going to tell you a story how I got started playing harpsichord. And, you know, I still remember when I was, you know, starting to get acquainted with Bach music, there's this video on YouTube of Masaaki Suzuki conducting the St. John Passion from the harpsichord, you know, with his long white hair and just so charismatic. And then I said to myself, I want to be like him, you know, maybe, you know, to conduct from the harpsichord. Maybe when I was 40, 50, or 60 years old, I really want to be like him. And in 2013, I was putting together several concerts, and one of them was this Handel's concert that required continuo. And I've invited an organist from the Eastman School, a doctoral student, but she bailed me 2 weeks before the concert. And I have given her all the music and all that. And she said, these are too challenging to play. And I understand that she might have been very busy and no time to, you know, to dedicate in the project. So I said, it's okay, I'll take the scores back. So at the time, you know, 2 weeks away from the concert, 1 week away from the production week. And I could have asked another organist, but they're always so busy. You have to book them like way, way early in advance. So I spoke with Pablo. I know he has a harpsichord, and I say, you know, Pablo, what should I do? And then Pablo was like, David, you know, you have an option. You can either ask an organist, or my harpsichord is available for you. And that was very generous and kind of him. And I said to myself, gosh, you know, I have to play, you know, but I was like, you know, maybe this is a sign, an opportunity for me to get started. So the day when I got the music back from the organist, I would go to Pablo's office every morning to practice for 3 hours. And Pablo, you know, gave me some crash course on how to play the harpsichord. And he is self-taught too. You know, he's a singer, but self-taught organist and harpsichord player. And he would tell me the basic principles, and then I just practice myself away. and for a week, and then the production week came, and we performed Handel's Utrecht Te Deum in Jubilate, and I conducted from the harpsichord, and that was my first time. Then the next year, we were putting together the St. John Passion, and my Jesus, Joshua Ooms, he challenged me, and he said, you know, I wasn't planned to conduct the St. John Passion from the harpsichord. It's just impossible for me at the time. But then he said, haven't you played, you know, the harpsichord? You know, why not do it for St. John Passion? I said, oh, no, I can never do it. And then he left, and then I thought to myself, you know, maybe I should do it. You know, and I encouraged myself. I said, you know, David Chin, you should try this. You know, worst come to the worst, just ask the organist to play everything. But if, you know, when the concert comes, and then if you're ready, you should play it. And there we go. And I conduct the St. John Passion and playing all the recitative. And what I found interesting is I was watching a documentary about the Mendelssohn's revival of Bach. St. Matthew Passion. I think it was 1829 in Berlin with the Zing Academy. He was 20 years old and he got a hold of this score, this manuscript of Bach St. Matthew Passion given to him by his grandma, I believe. And he went through the music with some of his friends and he decided that, okay, we should perform the St. Matthew Passion. And I think there are writings that say that he had a piano, a forte piano in the middle of the two orchestra where he plays all the recitative and he conducts the orchestra. And the choir, I think, was 150 to 200 people that split into two choirs. And there were a lot of amateur singers in it, along with professional musicians. So, and he was 20, you know, I am way beyond 20 and I think I have some catch up to do.
That is amazing. That's very inspiring, though, that you were willing to take the risk to sit down at a harpsichord and try it.
Well, I think not just me. I think many successful musicians that I've encountered, even successful musicians around me, there's a common quality that is that they are all risk taker. I think in order to be successful as a musician, you have to take the risk. You really have to. And then if you fail, you learn from it. But then if you do not take the risk, you never know what you are capable of doing. And that is what I'm very thankful for Dr. Weinert, because, you know, in Asia, there have been several teachers that came up to me and say, you know, one has a DMA in trumpet, and she went to my church and she said, David, you should, and you know, I was 15 or 16, she said, you should never pursue classical music. She said, you know, I have a DMA in trumpet, but you have no, there's no, you're not going to make a life, a living. You're not going to make a living being a musician. You should not pursue classical music. Classical music should just be a hobby. You should pursue pop music, you know, writing for movies and all that. And I'm glad I did not take her advice. And then there was another teacher that told me that this is after I had conducted my first performance of St. John Passion. And I wanted to do a premiere in Malaysia, which happened in 2015. But this teacher came up to me and told me that, David, I don't think you're ready to conduct the St. John Passion. You know, you should conduct maybe little cantatas more before you do the St. John Passion. And I didn't listen to the advice. And I went ahead and I premiered the St. John Passion, which I'm really glad I did. But here at Eastman, what I'm thankful about with Dr. Weinert is that he never discouraged me to conduct Bach. He knew me very well. He worked with me every day and he knew my musical skills. And he knew that sometimes I might not be ready, but you know what he said to me? He came to my dress rehearsal for St. John Passion, my very first St. John Passion. And I went back to where he was sitting and I talked to him. I say, you know, Dr. Weinert, I really feel like I'm not ready for this. You know, this is such a monumental work. And this was the final dress rehearsal, you know. Everything was going fine. But I told him, I say, I feel like the music is not deeply grounded in me yet. I say, I feel like, you know, I'm not ready to do this. You know what he said to me? He said, Dr. Weinert said, you know, after you conduct 4 or 5 times, you would be ready. You would feel ready, you know. And then you would not feel ready. See, that's a huge contrast. I think it's very important for me to know that my mentor trusts me and also give me the opportunity to really get my hands on this work. And I can tell you, the best thing that I have learned about Bach is from conducting his work. Not talking about it, not reading about it, but really doing it.
What was he like, Bach? What was he like as a person? Do you imagine having read about him, learned about him, and, you know, you said he was romantic, but,
yes,
you know, really was personality.
I'm sure he is like me. I think he likes food. I'm sure, you know, from his portrait. And I'm sure he is a very, he can be a very charming person, although the portrait doesn't say so, but that's the only thing we have today of him. You know, why do I think he is charming? You can tell from the music, you know. Sometimes this the inside jokes between musicians, you will only get it if you're a musician, you know. You throw things and you'll be like, ha-ha. But I can say that Bach is incredibly smart and intelligent. You know, for example, the St. Matthew Passion, there's this one part when Jesus sings about, this is the blood poured out for you, you know, for the remission of sin, you know, in the Last Supper. So Jesus would sing that, and then underneath it, the continuo would play exactly 116 notes. Why? Because in Psalm 116 verses 3, it says, I will take the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. So Bach is using the music to quote Psalm 116 verses 3, while Jesus is singing that, take and drink, this is the blood of the New Testament, pour for many for the remissions of sin. You know, little things like that. These are the things, you know, I discovered in lessons with Dr. Weinert. And, you know, of course, things that we're more familiar with, like, you know, when Jesus sings, there's always the halo, but when he's on the cross, the last word that he sings, there's no halo, which means the strings don't accompany him and all that. So very smart person, I think, Bach, very intelligent. And he's also a very busy person. You know, when I get very busy sometimes in my life, you know, multiple projects going on at the same time. And, you know, not only about the music, but you have to recruit musician, you have to promote the concert, you have to find the right musician, you have to think about the financial situation, everything that, a conductor does. And then when I get really frustrated and sometimes impatient, and I stop to think about Bach, you know, it's like, he was way more busy than I am. And he has no computer, he has no emails and all that. But he is still capable of producing a masterpiece week after week after week for years, you know. So who am I to complain, you know? So that, you know, Bach is my teacher too. He motivates me to really press on and move forward.
David Chin currently serves as the artistic director of the Hong Kong Bach Festival and the Malaysia Bach Festival, as well as being the principal conductor of the Association of Toronto Chinese Evangelical Church Musicians in Canada. And he is going to be conducting Bach's St. Matthew Passion on Saturday, March 25th at 7 o'clock at the Reformation Lutheran Church in Rochester, New York. If you go, you'll hear David Chin conducting and at the harpsichord with the Voices Chamber Choir and Orchestra, tenor Pablo Bustos as the evangelist, and Cody Mueller, bass as Jesus. I'm Brenda Tremblay. Thank you for listening to this podcast from WXXI in Rochester, New York.